This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. We're doing an Every Now and Then series on the program, revisiting the conversations that I've had with all kinds of people, writers, filmmakers, artists, people we just wanted to hear more from. In that vein, and given that the Oscars are on Sunday, we decided to give Wesley Morris a call. He's a critic at large at the New York Times, also the co-host of the podcast Still Processing. We have been talking to Wesley for years about movies, about takes of his on movies, hot and otherwise.
I don't mind the superhero franchise in theory.
Yeah, huh?
But in reality, what it's doing is it's ruining this whole other aspect of movie going for me, which is the experience of movie stars, which I love. I love movie stars.
So when we got him on the phone this time, we started where we almost always do. Just because you're a movie guy, we're going to start with movies. Okay. What do you like this year? I want the top three. Picture, actor, and actress.
Of things that, like, my preference? You're asking me my preference, what do you think is going
to
happen.
What do you think ought to win? Well, I want to know what you think ought to win.
Actor. I don't know. I feel like of those five people, it really would come down for me to Paul Giamatti or Bradley Cooper.
Really?
Yeah. There's something going on that is way beneath the surface of both what Bradley Cooper is doing in Maestro and what Paul Giamatti is doing in The Holdovers. And I kind of like that sort of acting where I think, you know, the thing about Giamatti is the writing facilitates that depth so that, you know, there is material there to bespeak all of the sort of pain and embarrassment and humiliation and disappointment that that character is dealing with. But the film itself is a comedy that needs him to operate at a particular frequency for its entire length.
It's so interesting to hear you explain that, because I watched that movie, The Holdovers, and I came out of it and I was like, yeah, I like that movie. And you've got this whole subtext that doesn't even occur to me. Okay, I really enjoyed Paul Giamatti. Here's my thing about it. It seems like that was just a classic Paul Giamatti role. It just, you know, you knew it was Paul Giamatti, right?
Uh-huh.
That was the whole thing. So I liked it. Here's the thing with Bradley Cooper and Maestro. While I think he did a spectacular job, I found the physical resemblance, props to the makeup people, I found the physical resemblance almost distracting.
Okay.
I don't know. You give me the layered analysis, because that's my superficial take.
I mean, I seem to be one of the few people who feels this way about this movie, but I don't think the movie is really that much about Leonard Bernstein.
Oh, yeah.
I think that what Bradley Cooper is doing in Maestro, it is a performance of great weightlessness, right? This guy is almost literally running everywhere. Mm-hmm. He's always in motion. He's always, and that's a conductor's job. All the deep stuff in this movie happens when he's just sitting there and taking something. There's a scene where Carey Mulligan plays
Bernstein's wife, we should say.
Right. So the Bernsteins are essentially having an argument in one of the rooms in their great house.
Yes.
And the house is on Central Park.
Yeah.
And up Central Park West comes the parade.
Yeah. The Thanksgiving Day parade. Yeah.
And he's sitting there and just like being told the truth. And he has to literally sit in it long enough for it to register what it is she is saying to him. And it's kind of shocking, the speech that she gives, because in these movies, the wife of a closeted gay person or a semi-closeted gay person, however you want to think about what Leonard Bernstein is at that moment. If you think about the person he's playing and the fact that nobody speaks to him this way and she's standing over him, she's conducting him at that point. It's just such a great, I'm also describing good directing here, but I'm also thinking about what it is that he has to give you as an actor to believe that he may or may not have received the message. And, you know, at the end of the scene, here comes Snoopy. And it's just,
right,
I don't know.
Right.
I think Cillian Murphy's going to win, because.
Do you?
I do. I don't buy that.
I'm
bad at these things, Kai. You've
it's
had me
literally
on here before,
your
and
job,
I've gotten everything
Wesley,
wrong.
How can you be at it?
My job is not to predict the doings of 10,000 people.
That's true. That's true. Actress, with a little bit of brevity here, please.
Okay, I'll go quick. There's one winner here. Her name is Emma Stone.
You think?
Oh, man. Oh, my God. There's so much going on in that performance from the standpoint of the body, language, and, you know, it's a funny performance. It also, at every point, is so technically sound. But I also stopped noticing how technically sound it was and was just focused on the adventure and good time this woman is having coming into her humanness.
Last thing, and then I have actual substantive stuff I want to talk to you about. what do you like for Best Picture?
Oh, it's Oppenheimer City, baby.
You think?
Oh my God, yeah. Right. Sorry.
Is that just like inertia, or this? You know, the fact that it came as part of the Barbieheimer thing. I mean,
no, because if that were the case, Barbie should be winning the Oscar, not Oppenheimer. Yeah. But I also think that it's a serious movie about a serious subject. It is almost too serious in a lot of ways. They like its seriousness. I also think that they like that Christopher Nolan made a thing they can finally give an Academy Award to, including giving one to him.
Yeah. All right. But before we go further down the other category rabbit hole, here's what I want to touch on. And this goes back to what we were talking about with the Bernstein movie, I think. When you go in to watch a movie, and look, mm-hmm. I know you've been doing this like for a career for 15 or 20 years, and so I'm asking you to sum it up in a couple of minutes. But when you go in to watch a movie, see a movie, how do you do it? What, right? I mean, does that make any sense, right? What are you thinking when you go in to see a movie? Because when I go to see a movie, I'm like, all right, I'm going to go see a movie. You're a professional. How do you go in the door?
With a notebook and a pen.
Do you?
I mean, that's for starters. Mostly I just want to feel something. I want to have a thought about something. I want to be surprised in some way or gratified or, I don't know, there's a whole range of experiences I'd like to have as a moviegoer. Because at the end of the day, Kai, I'm going in the same way you're going in. It's just I am tasked with having to publish a response to my experience. and that's... You know, I mean, I have to sort of be prepared to do that in some way. And the notebook really helps. It also really helps to have an open mind because you just never know.
Related question. And here's why we've had you on after such a long period. So we're going back and we're talking to people that I've talked about or two in the past and just running extended versions of those interviews because you guys have interesting things to say. And I say this as a way to set up two things. One is, if you have Barry Jenkins's phone number, give him a call because we're trying to get him on. But he apparently is in, his people tell us he's in a writing phase now. So he's gone silent.
Oh, and
so
good. That's great for all of us.
That is good news, right? Barry Jenkins and Moonlight and Underground Railroad and all that jazz. So we're going to get him eventually. I have confidence because we've had him in the past. But here's what that made me think of with you. And I went back and I read some of the recent stuff you've written about J-Lo and all kinds of other things. And this is related to how do you go watch a movie. Your writing it has been described as electric, in fact, in your own newspaper of record. And I don't argue with that at all. It is absorbing and it is propulsive. Here's what I want to know. You are a critic at large for the New York Times. You have a voice. You have a platform. You have, I forget how many Pulitzer Prizes. Okay, two. Here's what I want to know. When you sit down to write, whether it's about a movie, about this one or J-Lo or whatever, or about culture, which is part of your remit, right? And we've talked about that. Justice, racial equity, all those things. How do you approach the blank page?
Oh, my God. I usually know, I mean, I'm lucky. I don't sit there and... Well, that's not true. Sometimes I do. I sit there and I hope for the best. I just start typing and it's just like...
Every day, man, whoop, every day.
Yeah, we're not using that. I mean, my time, when I die, not that anybody's really going to think to do this, but like, if anybody really wants to get an insight into a writer's soul, you know, in this part of the 21st century, just try to get access to their time machine if they're a Mac user. There's going to be some drafts in there that are going to blow your mind. You know, I'm sure Toni was like, when Toni Morrison died, I'm sure she's like, I wrote it all down. It's all in a notebook and lives at Princeton, and you will never see all my drafts. Yeah. But, I mean, not that I'm Toni Morrison, just to be clear. But, I mean, I think that for any writer who has to write on a deadline and sort of record an experience that other people are probably going to have, there's a relativity at work here. There's a subjectivity at work here. There is a factual accuracy component. But mostly, I just really want to try to tell a story about the thing that I'm writing about. And often, it's just about the most prominent feeling about it. And sometimes you can do that by setting the scene of the movie itself, to take some examples from the thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like a nice concrete example as a place to start, or a story, you know, that I'm going to tell you about me relative to this thing. And then we can get into all of the synthesis and history and, you know, what about the work of culture that I'm, or the problem in the culture, or the, like, the joy of the culture, this cultural object is giving lots of us.
Last thing, and then we both have to go. And hopefully this one is an easy one for you. What is the job of a critic in this culture today, do you think?
I think it's mostly to facilitate people's understanding that it's okay to have strong feelings about things that aren't also categorical. To be ambivalent is okay. One of the ways in which I think about this job is basically to furnish people a way to look at an experience they either already have had or are probably going to have. I'm here providing a particular kind of service, and I've always resisted the idea of criticism as like a service, mostly because I was rejecting that feeling in the way that Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel had used it, which is by using their thumbs, essentially. Not only, that's not all they did, by the way. They're also great writers about the movies. But the reduction was the thing I was thinking about in terms of the service criticism provides. But really, the service is really like a means to think and to look anew.
Wesley Morris is a critic at large at the New York Times, also with Jenna Wortham, the co-host of a podcast called Still Processing. Wesley, thank you so much. It's really good to talk to you.
Kai, I'll come on anytime. It's great to talk to you.
I know. We'll call you sooner. It won't be another four years. All right.
All right.
Be good.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye. See ya.